What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Let's kick this thing off.
Bradley Miles is the co-founder and CEO of Roll, a platform that helps individuals create unique and branded fan-based digital currency, or what they call social money. In this conversation, we discuss social money, how content is currency, what the bull case for fan-based currencies are, and how big of an opportunity this could end up being. I really enjoyed this conversation with Bradley, and I hope you do as well. Before we get into the episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. The first is BlockFi. I'm an investor and a super happy user. They currently have three products. You can buy and sell crypto, you can deposit crypto and get a US dollar loan, or you can deposit crypto or digital dollars and earn up to 8.6% APY in their new interest-bearing accounts. No brainer if you're looking for any sort of interest. It beats every single interest rate in the legacy world. They're also running a special through the end of the month that if you go ahead and take one of the US dollar loans using crypto as collateral, they'll give you a little boost of extra free loans with no interest. So go check it out at blockfi.com/pomp. Again, blockfi.com/pomp. Our second sponsor is Choice. Super excited about these guys. They're a new self-directed IRA product. If you're listening to this, you're likely part of the 7.1 million Bitcoin owners who have retirement accounts with dollars in them, but not Bitcoin. I was in that situation too. So now you can actually buy real Bitcoin in your retirement account. I'm talking about owning your private keys and using tax-advantaged dollars to do it too. Absolute game changer. A new self-directed IRA product that allows you to use tax-advantaged dollars to buy real Bitcoin where you hold the private keys in that IRA product. RetireWithChoice.com/pomp. Again, RetireWithChoice.com/pomp. And lastly, don't forget that I write a daily letter to over 50,000 investors about business, technology, and finance. I break down complex topics into easy-to-understand language while sharing my opinion on various aspects of each industry. You can subscribe at pompletter.com. Again, pompletter.com. If you want to click on any of the links rather than type them in, you can also go in the description and they're all there for you to click. That's it. So let's get into this episode with Bradley. I hope you guys enjoy this one.
Anthony Pompliano is a partner at Morgan Creek Digital. All opinions expressed by Pomp or his guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Morgan Creek Digital or Morgan Creek Capital Management. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys. Bang, bang. I've got Bradley here. Super excited to talk. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, super excited. Thanks for having me.
For sure. For those that don't know you, let's start with background. Where were you born? Where'd you grow up? And what'd you do before Roll?
Yeah, so born in New York City. Grew up just outside of the city in a small suburb called Westchester. For those familiar, it's a small 1 square mile town there called Ardsley. Went to Columbia, became pretty fascinated with venture capital, wrote a book that a lot of people read actually called Break Into VC. It's funny, a lot of Gen Z people read it now and ping me, and it's kind of how they get their associate analyst jobs. From there, worked as an entrepreneur in residence at Techstars. And I was one of the founding researchers at CoinDesk. And my job was really putting together these huge reports called the State of Blockchain Reports after Mary Meeker's State of the Internet Reports. This was around the time there were around, you know, maybe five researchers in this space, 2015, 2016. Ethereum blew up, did a huge report on that, and really kind of never looked back.
Got it. And so first I got to ask about writing the book. Did you self-publish it or did you go with like a publishing house?
Yeah, it was a crazy story. So I won't name names, but I had a publishing deal in Canada. It's a small publishing company. And they were like, oh, this is great. A soft skills book. This fits with, you know, this other guy who's also writing a book. Yeah, we'll publish it in like 2021. And this was in like 2017. And I had slowly realized that I guess writing a book and getting a deal was very similar to like signing to a major label or something like this, where you really don't have any rights or decisions. So read literally 12 books on self-publishing, had a mini launch party, on Facebook at the time, and just launched it, man. And it's just become something that a bunch of people are reading that I'm pretty excited about. Yeah.
That's awesome. And then how'd you get the job at CoinDesk?
Yeah, it's a really good story. So I was working at a sort of an analyst associate at a firm, and this was around 2014. And we were all assigned sectors to sort of choose, and everyone was terrified of Bitcoin. So I just dove right in and basically chose Bitcoin as the sector I'd look into. And at that time, so sort of 2014, there really wasn't any news sources. There were a few blogs and really just CoinDesk. So all roads really led to CoinDesk. At that time, the team, there was about four people on the team. So this was Ryan Selkis, Pete Rizzo, and a few guys running ops. So literally pinged them, had a beer, jumped on, and the rest was sort of history from there.
That's awesome. And had you heard of Bitcoin before you decided to cover it, or you just were intrigued the first time you heard it?
Yeah, was pretty familiar. Sort of started hearing about it in like 2012, 2013, but didn't, was really trying to find an excuse to get involved. And just being the guy at a firm has always been, I kind of talk about that as an author, like a lot of folks still ping me and like, how do you get into VC? And you literally just need to become the person that kind of knows topics. So becoming that person for a topic was really interesting. I loved how everyone really shied away from the idea of digital currency in 2014, 2015. So just saw an opportunity to dive in.
So it made a lot more sense for you to do it. That's awesome. And so as you get to CoinDesk, you start writing these big reports, Ether and Ethereum come out. What was the general sense? Like there's a lot of people who know that the ICO was relatively popular in terms of the buildup to it, but maybe kind of from your seat at the time, like what was the things that you remember going into the ICO and then kind of the first couple of months afterwards?
Yeah, it was an insane time. I mean, people were, man, I can't name names, but people were coming to the office that had just raised like tens of millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars. At that time, they were all just really curious about how to get covered in CoinDesk. They wanted to be in sort of our reports. And my job also at the time was really looking into these things like Waves and sort of other blockchains that were sort of coming out and sort of seeing what's going on. It was pretty much the Wild West, just kind of like watching a John Wayne movie or something and just seeing all this sort of action happen. You really couldn't necessarily tell the difference between sort of an Ethereum or Waves at the time. It was kind of pretty difficult. But eventually, all the smoke cleared. I started diving a little deeper after the Ethereum hard fork. I had to write a piece on like Ethereum Classic and the differences, and was just pretty fascinated about that. The DAO came out and formally decided to start building on top of Ethereum around 2017.
Got it. And did you always know that you wanted to go and build a company, or was it something that as you just learned more about the technology, you eventually said, hey, this is something that I should go do?
Yeah, so that's another insane story. So basically, I was at CoinDesk, wrote the book, and effectively, the book did so well that I basically went on, needed to go on a book tour, and I spoke at around 20 colleges. And because of the nature of the book, breaking into venture capital, a lot of investors just started pinging me. I'm like, who the fuck are you? Like, how did you write this book? What's going on? And I got invited to a lot of panels that I probably shouldn't have been on, but jumped on them anyway. So one of those panels was with Alex Isgold, who's a former manager of Techstars New York. He now runs a firm called 2048 VC. Had dinner with him and basically made me an entrepreneur in residence at Techstars. It was the first check into me as the only kind of person at the company, and then sort of grew roll from there.
Got it. And so what, when you walk in day one, entrepreneur in residence at Techstars, like what did you want to build? Did you have any idea? And then kind of how did you get from there to here?
Yeah. So I'll basically phrase that by saying there was this one guy at Goldman Sachs that, there was this one guy at a bank that kind of came into CoinDesk And we're just really talking about sort of the advisory market and just sort of what was going on in crypto. And I was really just a fly on the wall in the room and really just thought, man, I could eat this guy's lunch. I know most of the people in the space. I know how to raise and all these things. So the very first idea, so sort of like the first few months, was pretty fascinated by the idea of starting an advisory group and really wanted to start this sort of consulting firm that could sort of separate sort of the tier one companies from the tier two companies that were kind of raising. So that was the initial impetus when I jumped into Techstars and then raised a sort of a small round off that and pivoted to Roll.
Got it. And so what is Roll today?
Yeah, so if I were to tell you in 2010 that the next 10 years would basically generate hundreds of billions of dollars in value for user-generated content, you know, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, et cetera, that would have been unfathomable. So that's going to, our thesis is that's going to repeat itself in a new way. So user-generated content is going to jump into the next phase, user-generated currency, or what Roll calls social money. So Roll is really a blockchain-based network that allows anyone to create, distribute, now invest and trade their own social money. So these are branded Ethereum tokens. We've made it literally as simple as clicking a button to sort of sign up. There's close to 200 communities on the network now. It's around 10,000 people that hold social money. And yeah, we're just super excited about where things are going and the opportunity.
All right. So let's start at the core of the conversation, which is what the hell is social money?
Yeah. So take you back again here. So you know, the concept of social currency, let's say, is around 120 years old, right? Or social capital. This idea that every kind of individual has this network around them, and that network has this sort of, you know, almost intangible value. We sort of carry this in like a philosophical sense. So what Ethereum uniquely allows you to do is turn this cultural primitive now into a digital and financial primitive. So the network value that, let's say you have, starting a podcast and sort of, you know, a Substack and having this presence, the idea is you could effectively make that fungible and tradable and sendable through Ethereum. And then for us, we see this really as a mass adoption primitive. In the future, we see many people having their own currencies. So we wanted to create a term that was super friendly, almost as friendly as ice cream, two words that people just like next to each other. And this effectively became social money. So social money are branded Ethereum tokens, named after individuals and communities, and yeah.
And so would it be fair to say that this is analogous to like Amazon gift cards, right? Where it's a branded currency that can be used within that network, or is that something that would be a little bit inaccurate?
Yeah, so we adopt a lot of language on Roll. So if you go to Roll right now, social money can be earned, it can be redeemed. But Ethereum adds these amazing benefits. I mean, first of all, social money now becomes interoperable across systems, right? And yeah, so there's social money on blockchain platforms like Uniswap. So social money is traded every day. People exchange it for different NFTs or collectibles. So it's sent all the time on OpenSea. There's folks that use it on Patreon and Twitch and Instagram and Twitter. So the idea of creating this interoperable, auditable system where the value could be integrated into different platforms is really special, because all of a sudden you're not just on the network, you become the network. And philosophically, that's why people we think are coming to Roll. They never really have their own money. And that's just the lead in. But philosophically, the sell is once you have your own money, you can create your own rules and become the network. And that's a very new value prop that we think is unique for the this decade.
So help me understand, like, why do I, let's say if I'm X person running a community, right? Let's just say it's, I don't know, whatever community. Why do I need my own currency versus just use whether it's fiat currency or one of the existing cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, so fiat currency is great. For social money, we really see this as complementary. So a lot of people that have an online community, effectively, a lot of them really have their own culture with fan behavior. They may even have their own language with GIFs and memes. What social money literally does is bring economics to that digital community or nation. The community now has its own money and its own sense of belonging. And what happens here is social money really opens up new feature sets, right? The community itself can be traded. It could exist on many platforms while being sort of independent of all platforms as well. And it's an amazing tool to really start incentivizing your community, right? So if there's something you want to do, whether it's sort of more subscriptions on YouTube or more comments on Substack, you can literally, like a new web superpower, generate that type of activity directly towards those actions with your social money.
Got it. And so I guess part of this is it's less about the money and it's more about the social component, the branding, et cetera. Like the monetary policy, if you will, is not the focus. It's much more around how do you use this new exchange of value in a community to get people to kind of stay locked in, be much more engaged, to participate, earn things, all of that type of stuff. Is that fair?
Yeah. So we're onboarding entirely new communities in this sort of completely new way. And, you know, we've made the economics as simple as, you know, Twitter has made, you know, character counts, right? So Twitter has a 280 character max. Roll has a 10 million unit of social money maximum supply. And so every person that comes on Roll doesn't need to do any mental math or anything like this. They'll come on and know that they have a 10 million supply. They'll get 2 million on day one. And so the rest will be released over time. But yeah, absolutely. You're able to now sort of send your social money across platforms, have it be spent on different products and create different ways for it to be earned.
So if I wanted to create, let's say, a pomp coin, right? And there's 10 million pomp coins that exist in the world. Do they all hold whatever value I ascribe to them? Is there an open market that determines that value? Do kind of the users in my community or network ascribe that value? How does that work?
Yeah, so first, if you created pomp, I think everyone would freak out in a really good way. You wouldn't be alone. There's a lot of people with massive communities that have just joined Roll. Fred Wilson's testing it out with ABC. We just talked to Ja Rule. We'll sort of be doing something with him later on. And folks like Cami Russo and sort of others that have built sizable communities are on Roll as well. What's very interesting is we basically clone the Uniswap protocol. So we have our own Uniswap front end, which allows any sort of social money to be traded easily. And what we would do effectively, if you wanted to, is start market making pomp, right? So we've done this enough that we could ascertain the value of any social money in the ballpark of, you know, an order of magnitude. So there's social money now that's worth $500,000 as market cap. There's some that's worth a few hundred thousand. So once we sort of do that, the market is really going to tell us the value of pomp at that point. And it sort of stays there. And what we've seen is, as more utility is driven towards social money, the demand for the network goes up, and that sort of increases the value of social money. So it's this idea of sort of the community is almost a form of cash flow. And if there's more demand for the community, there's more demand for your social money.
What's like the best way you've seen it used within a community? Any examples that you can talk about in terms of just, obviously when people hear money, they think, okay, you're paying for something or you're receiving value for something, but how have you seen this specifically used in communities that you think is pretty cool?
Yeah, so there's several examples. So I think one of the most popular ones that Barstool Sports wrote about this, a few others. So there's someone on Roll who's a young entrepreneur and sort of a community manager named Alex Masmej. And sort of Alex raised $20,000 with his social money named Alex. So he effectively built all of his rewards on Roll, built a network, and did a formal Kickstarter style crowdfund and used Alex as a crowdfunding mechanism. Another engineer named Kerman did this as well. So Kerman raised around $25,000. That's an extremely interesting use case, just kind of building your own network and monetizing in this new way. Aside from
the people who bought the Alex token or the other one, what did they get in return? Like, why would they buy Alex, for example?
Yeah. So buying Alex or Kerman, effectively gives you a stake in that person's network. And so what that means is you now own basically a percentage of this community. And if you believe in sort of the success of this community over time, what that could effectively lead to is sort of an overwhelming growth of what the community means. And the interesting thing is, this isn't just tied to Alex or Kerman, it's tied to the currency. And what we've seen over time is the most successful social money, its utility actually becomes democratized. So the biggest users of Alex and Kerman aren't exactly those individuals. They're people in the community using it in a peer-to-peer way, which is sort of fascinating. So you own a piece of this community that can exist over time and effectively increase as the demand for the network increases.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And then I guess you were going on about other use cases. So you have those two folks who raised money essentially when they sold this. What are some of the other use cases that you've seen?
Yeah, so there's a lady who was the very first person to issue on Roll. Her name's Laurel. I met her at VidCon. And Laurel is an influencer with over, you know, a million followers on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube, has never touched Bitcoin, has never touched Ether, is crazy about her social money called Tingles. And there's around 1,000 Tingle holders in the world. Tingles is traded every day on Uniswap. And Laurel uses Tingles to incentivize the KPIs that matter to her. Laurel has an OnlyFans, she has a Patreon, she has a TikTok, she has an Instagram, she has her own app. I'm a patron on her Patreon, so I'm on the $5 a month tier. Every month, I get a certain amount of Tingles for being a Patreon subscriber. I get a few thousand. If I were to increase my tier to $10 or $20, I'm going to get more Tingles from Laurel for this. And so what she's effectively doing is creating a network on top of her network with Tingles. So we've seen this with streamers, we've seen this with sort of creators. So streamers are sort of, whether it's Twitch or Mixer or DLive or any platform, the KPIs that matter to them are basically donations and subscriptions. So if you want to enhance those, an amazing way to do it is giving social money cash back. So streamers invented this on Roll. They literally stop the stream and just start streaming Roll and give some Pygos or Forcer or whoever the streamer is, give some social money back for those donations and subscriptions. So at large, we're really seeing social money act as a way to incentivize the KPIs that really matter to you.
Very cool. And I guess as part of this, is it all individuals so far, or have you seen what I'll call organizations and companies start to be interested as well?
Yeah, so we're at a fascinating turning point. So some interesting things that started happening a little while ago, groups started approaching us, and that was the first interesting thing. So there's a group called DeFi Italy. So they're a group in Italy, a meetup group, and they talk about DeFi. And so they minted Italia with us. And so, you know, if you want to be an Italian, you could hold some Italia and gets you access to sort of all these different things. Since then, we're about to make a few announcements. Ja Rule's been a friend of the company for a while. We're pretty excited about that. And there's a few other platforms that effectively want to be the role of their industry. So there's people that have reached out to us from top streaming platforms. There's people that have reached out to us that are connected to festivals like South by Southwest and Coachella. There's people that have reached out to us that are connected to esports teams and people that are connected to sort of DJs, et cetera. And they want to utilize the role infrastructure, the role protocol, to allow their platform to issue social money on behalf of their users. So if I run a popular DJ platform and Fatboy Slim's on there or DJ Jazzy Jeff or someone like that, you'll have a really simple interface already on that platform where those DJs can plug in, utilize the Roll protocol, and issue social money on behalf of the user on other platforms. And so this is the future of Roll we really see, where everything touched social in the past 20 years. We think everything's going to touch social money in the next 20 years.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you start to look at kind of the comparison. So take a South by Southwest. They don't necessarily have money, but they have everything from wristbands to passes and kind of all of these things that essentially give you access to events and things like that. But I can't necessarily take my wristband and exchange it in any way with either other attendees or people who aren't there. I'm sure there's people who go, you know, when they're done with the event and they go sell it to somebody outside so they can get into the event or whatever. But it sounds like really what you guys are attempting to do here is create a digital item that has both monetary value and kind of the economics behind it, but also has the utility that could be used, for example, getting access to an event or attending something or getting a piece of content or a meet and greet or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the opportunity is massive. I mean, just to give you sort of a sense here, by default, we've kind of become the PayPal of this concept, right? So this idea that this type of social money can be moved, can be created and moved anywhere, anytime to anyone all over the web, the same sort of value prop as PayPal, but for social money. And that's allowed, you know, substantial platforms to now reach out to us and create a V2 of Roll where we just become the social money web infrastructure for these massive platforms. And that's huge. And there's huge incentive for entrepreneurs to do this, right? To become the role of esports, the role of events, the role of fitness, et cetera. And so entrepreneurs are sort of reaching out to us, they're ready to do this. And the most exciting thing is, you know, we won't necessarily onboard like a South by Southwest or a Tribeca Film Festival or sort of a 100 Thieves or Fatboy Slim. Entrepreneurs will do that through their platforms. We'll literally just be the infrastructure that allows it to exist on the network.
Yeah, it's super interesting. You mentioned a couple of people who are using it. Who are the biggest people using it? And then give me an example of somebody, you don't have to name them, who's tried this, it hasn't worked, and explain why they found it didn't work.
Yeah, so some of my favorite people using Roll, it's a bit niche, but it's sort of the digital artist category. So there's these people making, you know, the whole CryptoKitties NFT framework. There's people making, you know, provably scarce digital art through that. And they're creating social money on Roll. So my favorite is probably this guy, Jeff, goes by Skeeny. He's from Madrid. He tattoos skulls on people's arms and backs. And he approached us and created Skull. And he makes skull-based art. And what happened next was pretty fascinating. So he offered his skull-based art on OpenSea in Skull. And what happened next is different games and exchanges and artists also started accepting Skull. And Skull just became this peer-to-peer thing that all of a sudden had nothing to do with this guy who created it. We started to market make Skull. People now sort of trade it every day. But you're seeing that as sort of this inevitable path, this democratization of utility. One person starts it. All of a sudden, it's used for many different cases. That's been pretty fascinating. I love what's happening in sort of the newsletter community. So a lot of folks on Substack, Tiny Letter, different sort of email subscription services, they're just dropping their social money at the end of a newsletter, and they're dropping like 10 or 15 different links, and you know, only the first few people can claim. And it's just sort of like Pavlovian training for people to sort of jump in and sort of collect, open the newsletter quickly and sort of collect social money. One category we're really thinking through, we just onboarded our first one is athletes. So I think athletes are interesting. So we have a lot of like founders, we have a lot of engineers, a lot of community members, we have a lot of artistic creatives. I think there's a wide opening spot for athletes. I think what would naturally happen, and we're seeing this happen right now, people will start building platforms that are for specific groups using social money. And the idea is Roll would be that infrastructure. So we think there does exist a specific role-based platform for streamers, for artists, for rappers, for athletes. And those are things I think we'll kind of see built in the next few years, hopefully on Roll's infrastructure.
So elaborate on that a little bit, right? Like, where does all this go? Because I think a lot of people look and they say, okay, so you basically have infrastructure built. There's a couple of people who have created, a couple being, you know, 200 or so people who have created these social money currencies. They're using it in a various number of formats, but they're, you know, relatively small compared to the, you know, the world, right? It's not like Kanye West or an NBA player or anybody yet. I think that that's kind of where you guys aspire to get to. And there's a strong argument as to being able to get there, but where do you see this, let's call it, you know, 10 years from now, right? You started out earlier talking about kind of user generated content, creating all this value that a lot of people wouldn't have expected. What does that look like, kind of the bull case for social money?
Yeah. So at scale, what you'll see is content becoming currency. And so we've created this simple framework where people, you know, kind of for the first time, can now come to a platform and create their own currency. What happens next is Roll just opening up its smart contracts, right? So let's say we onboard Coachella or South by Southwest, and we have such significant mindshare in the idea of minting a social money for an event that you want to mint some social money for, you know, your birthday party, or let's say a Zoom call. It may not make sense to have the same monetary policy that, you know, Coachella has or that we currently have on Roll. You may just want to create 5 and maybe an exclusive party. You might want to create 15 or 1,000, you know, whatever. You'll actively be able to decide all of these economic parameters through other platforms that will sort of integrate Roll. So you'll see like Roll parties, right? And you sort of log in and kind of do it. So this is sort of the long tail, right? A bunch of nannies are getting together for some wine and, you know, the Hamptons, they'll create a sort of simple token for their party to kind of engage, and sort of that'll be the end of it. At scale, I think what you'll see is the most interesting people creating completely new economies because it philosophically makes sense for them to own the value of their network. You could redefine influencer marketing in this way. Brands will effectively now want a piece of someone's currency because that's the network that the individual is saying matters the most. That's what hundreds of thousands of people are now holding. And that's what exists across, let's say, a TikTok or Twitter or next generation platforms. So not only will the next generation of social natively integrate this type of currency, but how brands communicate with people can be changed if this network shifts, right? And the paradigm becomes about the currency over the content. And that's sort of the world which we see and the infrastructure we're kind of building for.
So in that world, like, how big is that, right? Is that a $100 billion type economy that gets built there? Is that $1 trillion? Is it $10 million? Like, just how do you think about scale here? And understanding that I'm basically asking you to hit a moving target 10 years out is almost an impossible task. But just kind of like today, how do you think about how big this can get from an addressable market standpoint?
Yeah, so there's two things that Roll is, really. So Roll is, one, it's web infrastructure. It's this idea that, you know, we could send Pomp back and forth, and you could use Roll web infrastructure to send Pomp from Twitch to Twitter to Shopify to Pizza Hut to the mall. And there's the underlying Roll protocol, really, which anyone could sort of plug, Gmail could plug into, right, and create a Roll plugin, start sending, et cetera. So as everything has sort of wrapped around social, if optimistically everything then wraps around social money, we're seeing this as a potentially $1 trillion opportunity with multiple players. And the opportunity there is owning concepts, right? What do journalist tokens look like? How are they different from DJ tokens or event tokens? That these types of categories are going to be enormous. And we're sort of the first significant players seeing that vision. I don't think we'll be the last, but we are bringing this to market in a way that the masses are reaching out. So at a protocol infrastructure level, creating a Coachella token or South by Southwest or sort of these different brands or communities, it's in a multi-trillion dollar category.
Got it. And I guess as part of creating that, you mentioned multiple players. Do you feel like there will be specialization around different use cases, or do you feel like you guys can build kind of the foundational layer? And then as you described, you'll get kind of vertical building by entrepreneurs around, you know, role parties or journalist tokens or whatever there.
Yeah. So I think what we're seeing right now is we have such significant mind share that the different players are reaching out, but you can really unbundle a lot of things that are going to happen. Right. So like right now there's like roles like a one-stop shop, right? So you're minting a particular different type of currency right now. But you know, in the next year, people may want this, you know, Chipotle style minting process in a fast casual way. I may want to mint a token for my birthday party on Saturday, or, you know, my relationship, or is it anything like this. So you'll see different minting products. You'll see this, as you said, sort of break into categories. I think those will be owned by people in those communities. So what'll happen is someone that knows a lot of people in events will contact a blockchain first company like Roll, integrate it, and then sort of onboard those types of people. So yeah, you will see segmentation. I think Roll's position in that to sort of mass audience is really how it moves from one platform to another, right? So if you onboard Fatboy Slim on this DJ platform, he may also be interested in streaming on Twitch. We may create a time-released bot that releases, let's say, Fatboy based on sort of how long the streams are. You may also want to send it on Twitter, integrate it into a Shopify. These are all part of the world that Roll exists in, moving social money from one place to another.
So we've talked a lot about people who all consider the edge cases in terms of general society, right? So these are people with smaller communities, things like that. Obviously, the largest networks in the world are the Facebooks, the Twitters of the world. What is your thought process around, we've seen Facebook try to create a currency that doesn't really kind of correlate here, that they went more after what I'd consider like a nation state type currency. Yeah. Twitter has obviously a CEO and founder who is very bullish on Bitcoin as a currency. Do you feel like this type of social money is targeted at a different type of audience than, let's say, the Facebooks and Twitters? Or do you see a world where maybe, whether it's them or other large networks, maybe Twitch or whoever says, hey, look, we actually want to create a Twitch coin, right? A Twitter coin, and can use what you guys are building to do that?
Yeah, I think the real premise or sort of why we're personally fascinated by Roll is it flips the entire thesis of social on its head, right? Chris Dixon from Andreessen writes a little bit about this. Like, as a platform develops, it just ends up competing with its users and sort of cannibalizing a lot of the activity that happens. And you saw that with sort of Instagram getting rid of likes and sort of a few other things like that. And flipping that thesis on its head and allowing individuals to be the network on top of these platforms is a completely new idea. So we've seen like Can and Props and sort of different platforms create tokens. And if that continues to happen, right, if there is a Facebook coin and a Snapchat coin, one isn't going to adopt the other, right? So Facebook isn't going to want to use Snapchat coin, and Twitter isn't going to want to use Facebook coin. But everyone's going to want to use Kim's coin. Instagram's going to want to use it. Snapchat's going to want to use it. So imagine the top 1,000 influential people on the web having their own currency. This just becomes the way of operating and sort of filters down. So I think that's the real play here, instead of sort of a platform creating their own currency. And I think that's sort of what we're after right now.
What does that user experience look like, right? So if pretty much every network I'm a part of, every community I'm a part of, every person that I kind of subscribe to, if everyone has their own currency, like, how do I as a user manage all of that? How do I kind of think through that? Does it become overwhelming to me? What's kind of the thoughts there?
Yeah. So right now you can kind of think about it as, you know, the thesis of like, everyone that, you know, can create a YouTube channel will create a YouTube channel. So everyone that, you know, wants to create a currency will, and it'll be somewhat similar to that. It'll be somewhat similar to the people that you follow, the YouTube channels that you go to. You may hold, you know, 400 different currencies, but you may only actively engage in, you know, let's say 20. What's become fascinating is, people see social money as a primitive. So this is starting to grow in a sense. And the question becomes, like, what do you build on top of the social money primitive? And a lot of people are really excited about the concept of curation. How can you reimagine Twitter in this version where the sort of boards are different people's currencies? And so once you start playing around, you know, reinventing social with this new type of money, you get these really unique ideas of sort of how to play and engage in value. And I think that kind of changes who wins and sort of how they win. But generally, yeah, the process and how you associate with these currencies will be very similar to how you associate with the content around that individual.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And I guess if, let's say, 5 to 10 years from now, this is unsuccessful, meaning social money does not become a thing, what would you say is the number one reason today that you could see that happening? Like, what's the biggest risk in terms of this being unsuccessful moving forward as just an overall industry trend of social money?
Yeah, so I would say right now, I'd say in the next few years, I think what we're going to see is overwhelming developer interest. I think one knack people have in on this space is sort of blockchain in general is it's almost the same. It's almost a knitting circle of the same like 20,000 people talking to each other about the same topics. You're not really seeing a lot of new energy come in. Almost the same protocols are kind of using each other in sort of different ways. If developer demand sort of increases in this category and massive platforms are starting to utilize this primitive of social money, I think everyone wins, right? More people are using Compound, more people are using Uniswap, et cetera. You're bringing in sort of new people, new tokens, new ideas. So I think one thing that would stop that is sort of this latent developer demand over time. Luckily, we're seeing that now. But if the people who run massive platforms for some reason don't want to integrate these sorts of ideas or be able to have their communities mint tokens, you could see sort of a stagnation. And we're not seeing that now, but I think if we do see that in the future, probably shift, figure out why, and to reassess how to get people excited.
And then talk to me about the technology stack in terms of all of this right now is being built on top of Ethereum, from what I understand. Do you see that being the long-term strategy? Do you think that there's the possibility other things will pop up that can kind of replace that foundational blockchain? Kind of how do you think about technology stack and Ethereum versus other things?
Yeah, so Ethereum has a really special place in people's hearts right now. It's sort of the largest developer community. I think it may have surpassed Bitcoin. Not sure about that. But you know, we're going to go where basically the developer excitement is. So we're sort of at heart, we're sort of blockchain agnostic, but you know, we do love Ethereum as sort of our kind of introduction to sort of these types of applications. But it's, you know, it's somewhat plausible that another blockchain sort of comes in and does this. But the idea of Roll sort of porting that value from one blockchain to another becomes feasible, right? There's nothing that effectively like ties Roll forever to Ethereum. But yeah, we're just going to continue to build because they have the most primitives. No one needs to rebuild a Uniswap or a Compound or sort of any of these things. And we're really excited about, you know, how things are going. I think there's going to be some interesting things with sort of ETH2 and layer 2 scaling. And, you know, we may adopt some of those in the future.
I gotta ask, does ETH2 ever happen?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. Luckily, how Roll works, Roll works in a semi-custodial fashion. So there's thousands of people that are sending money back and forth every day using Roll on sort of internally, and they use these links to blast them out to massive amounts of people. All of those things are sort of off chain. So sort of go back to sort of Roll's semi-custodial wallet there. So for us, we really don't necessarily need ETH2 to come out. We would love it to come out to sort of enhance what's going on with us. But yeah, I think it's feasible that it comes out in the next sort of, I don't know, maybe 2 to 4 years.
Awesome. What's the one thing that has surprised you since you started Roll?
Oh, hip hop culture is starting to embrace blockchain in interesting ways. So we just did this podcast with Ja Rule, which was fascinating. He's an awesome guy. I learned about his background from Def Jam, but the conversation really turned into something really special because we saw a lot of commonalities between blockchain and hip hop. Right, they both started in this one place. Right, hip hop in the Bronx, 1973, and you know, Bitcoin blockchain with the Bitcoin white paper. And, you know, somewhat centralized, and they both sort of spread out, sort of became decentralized over time to where anyone could sort of utilize the technology. And so the idea, the thesis of that, like, interview was like, is blockchain the next hip hop? And if so, like, what is the Def Jam moment where, you know, the Beastie Boys of blockchain comes into the Run DMC, where all of a sudden hundreds of millions of people are using it. And so you're seeing a lot of cultural figures that are, you really wouldn't suspect it, but I kind of talked to them behind the scenes, and they're in this category where they're super excited about blockchain. They just haven't found a reason to dive in. And we're seeing, if you literally brand a token after their presence, it's something that they're excited about. So those conversations are super exciting. I wouldn't expect an audience like that to embrace Roll.
Look, it's a thing. I think I said this to a Ben Baller once when he came on a podcast. I told him that he's a disruptor. He's an entrepreneur, right? He doesn't think of himself that way, but that's what he's done his whole life, is he's built things, right? And he's been innovative. And so I think that a lot of folks, especially, you know, kind of the people that you and I probably look up to as like the hip hop legends, kind of from the 80s and 90s, like that's really what they did, right? They had no other choice. They had to innovate and build. And so it's kind of cool to see that they have an interest in more technology-driven stuff. We've seen it from professional athletes and all that, but seeing it from kind of the music side is surprising.
Yeah, another thing I'm excited about is just our investor base is pretty diverse in terms of where they come from. So there's folks that, you know, were their first blockchain bet. There's folks who, you know, their only other bet is Coinbase. So this is Gary Vaynerchuk and sort of his brother AJ. They've been super supportive, seeing a long-term vision there. Spencer Dinwiddie's great, another investor, been on your show a few times. Arthur Hayes, you know, sort of name synonymous with sort of Bitcoin derivatives, built a massive business, thinks this can be a massive business as well. All the way to just, you know, traditional investors as well, Silicon Valley VC firms. So having that sort of varied investor base is pretty helpful as well.
That makes sense. Shout out to Spencer. He's always got a spot in my heart.
Yeah, great guy.
Awesome. Before I wrap up, I ask the same two questions. First one is, what is the most important book that you've ever read?
Ooh, you know what? I knew you were going to ask that. I have several answers, but I guess I'll go with the top of mind answer. It's really hard to fire people. It's really hard to have serious conversations with people, whether it's at a founder level or a company level or sort of anything sort of concrete or difficult like that. And there's a massively successful book. I'm just saying this because I imagine people have rattled off the same sort of top entrepreneur books. So I'm gonna name a more obscure one. So this book is called Crucial Conversations. You can look it up on Amazon. Literally tells you how to start, you know, go through the messy middle and sort of end of all these very serious conversations that you need to have in a business context. After you read that, you just feel like you have the armor to deal with any of the crazy nonsense. Let's say your company or firm scales to like 50, 75 people. It's a lot of nonsense going on at all times. Reading that book, you'll just feel prepared for all these instances. So Crucial Conversations would be my bet.
I love it. A less serious question, aliens, believer or non-believer?
Oh my God, I've never been on record here. Yeah, Joe Rogan did a pretty interesting podcast with a few believers, and I do have to say that it is probably likely that extraterrestrial life is out there. It is also probably likely that perhaps we're in a simulation. These are all theories that people talk about. Probabilistically, yes.
Would you believe that aliens are real or the simulation is real? Which one do you believe more?
We're getting into wacky territory here, but if I have to answer, I would say that it could be possible that extraterrestrial life is running a simulation, and we are the reality TV of other areas, and maybe some of the sightings that people have. Or sort of like the repair guys kind of coming in and kind of just like fixing the simulation and going back. But maybe that's the case.
The aliens are just jealous that they don't have social money. That's fine.
Yeah.
You could ask me one question to finish up. What do you got for me?
Under what circumstances would you mint pomp?
I, for whatever reason, I knew that's what you were going to ask me. I want to see it. There's two things that I'm waiting for. One, I want to see it used at scale in a way that gives me the confidence it's a good investment of time, right? So the time investment is the most important thing to me. And time I use as a proxy. The more that I sink time into it, that means the more that I'm asking the community and audience to trust me that this is real, this is going to work, it's going to be sustainable, et cetera. And in this case, when it comes to investing, I'm like guns blazing, love to be the first or very early to do things. When it comes to the content stuff, I'm actually like very late to the game on a lot of things. So like I don't even have a TikTok, for example, right? Some of it's by design of like, I really got to be convinced something's worth it, because I know that once I decide to do something, like it is a multi-year thing. So like that, one of the things I tell everyone who wants to create content is like, hey, when you start, are you signing up for 5 years or 10 years? And a lot of people are like, oh, I didn't realize that. I thought I was just going to do it for like a week. It's like, nah, you like this is a multi-year thing. So I think that's one. And the second thing is, I don't think that I understand yet what I would do with it. And that's on me of like, I just haven't critically thought enough about like, hey, if I had this, like, what would I do with it? Frankly, I probably would like joke around on Twitter, right? Which maybe that is a good use case. I just don't know. But I would have to think really deeply about like, if I'm going to do it, how do you do it? And I think part of, I always go back to this one principle. When I worked at Facebook, there was a saying internally that was always deliver more value than you extract, right? Or deliver more value than you deliver or than you take. And in this case, a lot of the use cases that I see, it's probably an equal value transfer, right? It's like I'm getting as much value as I'm giving. And so I would have to just think more critically about how do you actually use this in a way where the community people or the users get more value than I'm actually getting. You will be helpful to me help thinking through that, but also I think I just got to sit and critically think about it. And then once I know that and I see kind of, one or two examples of it being used at scale, you'll get me.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. Just wrapping.
I see your wheels spinning. You're trying to think of how you could sell me as soon as we get off the call.
Well, no, just hypothetically, I think you were on our list. You're in our top 10 of people we wanted to grab. But yeah,
listen, never say never.
No, of course.
All right, man. Listen, Brian, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I will. Where do you want people to go? Where can we send them to check out you and Roll on the internet?
Yeah. So check us out at www.tryroll.com. There's 10,000 people using social money right now. You could sign up for our beta. We're going to open that up to the general public soon. You could follow us on Twitter at TryRollHQ. Shoot us a DM or just say hi. I'm at Bradley_Miles_ if you want to say hi as well. And yeah, it's about it.
Awesome, man. Well, listen, thank you so much for doing this, and we'll have to do it again in the future.
Cool, man. Yeah, this was great. Thanks for your time.